The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live this evening, send her an email, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, right to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you very much, Gary, and welcome everyone to Down the Garden Path. This first Monday in March, we are the season is upon us shortly. So I want to thank everybody for joining me this evening to learn about some practical advice for garden plants and all things landscaping. And I always try to mention landscape design, and it is definitely start of the season. The phones are ringing, and I've been to a few appointments already and have a few designs on the go. So I want to let our listeners know to contact a landscape designer near them if they are considering doing something this season. Now is the time.
Now is the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't wait last, you know. The advice is don't wait last minute.
Yes.
Because everyone says, I'm going to call in May to get a deck put in June.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not going to happen this year.
It doesn't work that way.
No.
That's right. So it's been a good time so far. So I'm looking forward to a busy season. And I'm very excited about the show this evening. We've talked before in the past about bees and neonics and honeys with our honeybee farmer, Steve Lawrence. So I'm really excited to talk a bit more with the gardening end of things, too, regarding a pollinator garden. So I wanted to welcome our guest this evening. Her name is Claire Jones. And Claire and I have met last summer when she was here in Toronto for the annual Garden Bloggers Fling. I have all these friends that I've met from the Fling that have been so kind to come on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to talking about pollinator gardens with her this evening. And here's a little bit about Claire. She has quite an experience here. So chosen to decorate the White House for Christmas in 2011 and 2015.
Wow.
Claire is also a beekeeper and garden traveler, a Maryland certified professional horticulturalist, and owner of Claire Jones Landscapes. Claire's designed gardens have been featured in Chesapeake Home, Style Magazine, Wall Street Journal, Garden Design, and National Garden Tours. A speaker and demonstrator at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show in Seattle and the Philadelphia Flower Show. Claire has done presentations on miniature garden, pollinators, and landscape design solutions. It's right up my alley. A garden blogger at the Garden Diaries and a monarch butterfly enthusiast, she is also a master flower judge and former director of the National Garden Clubs in Maryland. Wow, what a title. Welcome to the show, Claire.
Hi, it's great to be here, and I'm ready to talk about nectaring and pollinators.
Excellent. I'm so glad. You are such a busy lady involved in so many aspects of the horticultural industry. When did you start beekeeping?
I've been in beekeeping for about 15 years.
Wonderful.
And, you know, it's a big jump because it's expensive.
Mm.
I didn't know what to do. And I just started going online and looking at my resources. And then I joined a beekeeping club.
Okay.
And that is the impetus that got me started because they helped me. They gave me information. They mentored me, helped me get my equipment. And that's how I got started.
Wonderful. And so you've been in it long before it was kind of like the in thing to do.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's always been kind of my lifestyle. I was into organic gardening way before it became popular, and landscaping way before that was popular. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you hit it early, you really get up to speed on it. And then when it becomes popular, you can talk about it with other people who are newbies.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, so you seem to be able to be ahead of the wave, ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve, yeah. And now I'm trying to get everybody on board with the pollinator situation, because more and more people are becoming aware of this situation. Mm-hmm. And the situation just means that pollinators are in trouble. So I want to make sure that everybody, gardeners and non-gardeners, because this affects everybody,
mm-hmm.
That they're aware of what they can do to help them. And people ask me all the time, even if you don't want to keep bees, there are things that you can do to help pollinators.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about some of those things. Do you want to talk about just the importance, you know, how you feel about the importance of bees, both the native and the imported?
Yeah, sure. Now, a lot of people aren't aware that the honeybee is an import.
Mm-hmm.
It came over on the Mayflower.
Wow.
With the pilgrims. So it is not a native. But we have over 4,000 native bees in North America, which, of course, includes Canada. And I'm sure people are more familiar with, like, bumblebees,
mm-hmm.
or sweat bees or carpenter bees. These are all native bees that have been here and have been pollinating. But the honeybee, which is an import, it is a great pollinator in that it will visit one flower, say, for instance, clover, and go from flower to flower to flower, meaning it will go from one clover flower to another, and that takes care of the pollination. Other bees, the native bees, aren't strictly one-flower bees.
Okay.
Like a mason bee might go from a clover flower to a rose flower.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not doing the proper job of pollination.
Okay.
But they don't care. They're just getting their nectar and their pollen and doing their thing.
Right.
But that is why the honeybee is valuable for pollinating our crops. And I'm sure everybody's heard this, that 1 in 3 mouthfuls of vegetables or plants that you eat has been pollinated by a honeybee.
Wow.
Or a native bee.
Wow. I don't think I've heard it breaking down to a mouthful. That is very interesting.
Yeah. And that is scary, because if the honeybee, which is being attacked from many fronts,
mm-hmm.
if they decline too much, the farmers are going to be in trouble. And food will be more expensive for everybody.
Right.
So that's the importance. And I think the United States is getting on board, because the president has assigned, this is one of his priorities, and he has assigned several committees to study it,
mm-hmm.
and form partnerships, which he calls pollinator partnerships. To take care of the problem and see if they can't help out the honeybee. So I think that is a real positive step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And like you said, or you were mentioning off camera, I was going to say off, I don't know, before we were live, whatever it's called,
yeah.
Before the show, you were mentioning
off,
about
off
Europe.
Air.
There you go. Off air. That's the word. Europe has really been the real, again, I'm losing my train of thought. But they have kind of spearheaded initially about the banning and the real raise. They've really raised the flags and kind of been a precedent setter when it comes to the neonics and the bees.
Well, yeah. Now, the EU has banned them, and this is the European Union.
Right.
And they banned them in 2013, so they were really ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
But they're kind of back, backpedaling right now.
Where
they have allowed a few, like 6 months, they allowed them back in because the farmers raised such a fuss.
Yeah.
So they allow them back in. So it's not a total ban. They're allowing, you know, selectively different ones in that the farmers really need to get their crops in.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, but the U.S., they're late to the party, a little late. And people are waking up and starting to realize that this is something that needs to be done. And when I say something, we're not going to get a total ban on pesticide use because that's, I think, is impractical at this point.
Yeah.
But being a beekeeper in Maryland, which is in the mid-Atlantic, I am in a club, and it is before the Maryland legislature, this law to ban the neonics.
Okay.
Yeah, and of course, there's a lot of controversy surrounding it. It's been up through the government before. It was smacked down. But this year, it looks like it might go through, though in a weakened state.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down to Annapolis in just last week, and they wanted beekeepers in their bee garb in the legislature talking to the lawmakers, giving out pamphlets.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, just to give them information because I have to say the legislature, the lawmakers, they really don't know all the ins and outs.
Right.
They have to be informed, just like the public has to be informed.
Yeah.
And even the big chemical companies, they're concerned, and they've sent people from Germany to Maryland to testify against this ban.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very concerned.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're hoping, and it's going through, actually, this is this week where they're going to vote on it.
Oh, okay.
We're hoping to have a, at least, it's not going to be a ban on neonics, but at least to have some kind of labeling.
Mm-hmm.
So you know when you buy a plant
mm-hmm.
that it has been sprayed or it was grown from seed treated with neonics, it has had some kind of, you know, some kind of response from neonics.
Yeah, contact, yeah.
So we're really concerned that people, when they buy something, they know what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we don't get this, to go through the Maryland legislature and it doesn't become law that it has to be labeled, we're hoping that people will go to their big box store.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name them.
No, we have them here too. Yeah.
They go to their big box store or their nursery and say, I want to know which plants have been treated with neonics. And we feel that that will put the pressure then on the nursery trade
mm-hmm.
to really, really eliminate them and get rid of them and, you know, try to produce their plants without them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, we're really hoping for this, that it will become law. But if it doesn't, and in Canada, I'm not sure how Canada is handling it. I did read that the Ontario province is supposed to get an 80% reduction for 2017 on corn and soybeans.
Yep. That's what I have too. Yeah. So it's a start for sure.
Okay. So yeah, it's baby steps.
Yes.
We got to start someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really good to, first of all, to raise people's awareness and then get people to act. And if we can't get it a law, then have people, you know, send an email, call their legislature, or just go march into that garden center and say, hey, I want to know which plants are neonic free.
Right. Well, that is good. And I think social media has been a big part of that, too, about spreading the word more. I think that has really helped spread the word and make everyone a little bit more informed. So I think that's a good thing. And it is, and it's been in the media, and people are understanding more and more.
It's been all over social media. That's a good thing about social media.
Yes.
if you have a really good issue that you want a lot of people to know about, mm-hmm. then you just have to say it and give a good image and have a good message.
Excellent. Now, how have you found your hives? Like, I know when we've had the other beekeeper on who farms, he kind of produces and sells his honey. And both times mm-hmm. he was on, he'd had quite a significant loss of bees when he woke them up in the spring. How have you done? How have your hives been?
Well, okay, so I can compare because I've been beekeeping for like 15 years.
Right.
And when I first started, I had no problem with keeping my bees through the winter.
Okay.
But then starting like maybe 5 years ago, and this is when the colony collapse problem came, mm-hmm. you know, in the news and was a problem with beekeepers. That's when I started having problems with my hives overwintering. So when that happens, you're starting from ground zero because your hives are dead and you have to buy a nuke, which is a little mini starter beehive, mm-hmm. or you have to buy a package, which is a queen with 10,000 bees. So first of all, it's expensive because mm-hmm. you have to put out the money for it. And second of all, you have to start from scratch mm-hmm. every spring. So you're not as likely to have a successful hive to get honey. And that's the reason that a lot of people raise bees.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my main reason is because of honey. And of course, pollination, that comes along with it.
Okay.
But this year, I only have three hives.
I
have 3 to 5 hives at any one time. This year, I was looking at them and 2 are dead.
Oh, whole hive dead.
And
wow.
What?
Like the whole hive is dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
See, what happens is as soon as it gets over like 45 to 50 degrees, and that would be Fahrenheit,
mm-hmm.
the hive will come out. All the workers will start coming out.
Yeah.
They're looking for nectar and pollen to take back to the hive.
Yeah.
Well, if I don't see activity at the hive entrance, I know it's dead.
Oh.
So I noticed that 2 were dead and the 1 was very active. So I was thankful to have the 1, really.
Wow.
But those 2, you know, I'm going to have to clean them up and just start all over. So I ordered my 2 starter hives for that. And, you know, starter hives are cost me $160 U.S.
Wow.
each. So that's significant outlay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't make money out of this. I call it an expensive hobby.
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel sorry for beekeepers who try to make a living out of it because it's hard to make a living, to make money out of it.
Yeah.
And most beekeepers who do make a living out of it, they're the ones who take their hives, like, and ship them out to California to pollinate the almond grove.
Right.
So, you know, they're what I call migrant beekeepers.
Okay.
They're always moving with their beehives.
Yeah.
But me, just being a backyard beekeeper, you know, they're in my backyard. I have 2 acres of ground here, and for my bees, I'm always looking for things to plant for them.
Right.
And when I say plant, I want things that flower early
mm-hmm.
and flower late.
Yeah, because that's important, right? Yeah.
The reason is they're out there right now. I don't know. What's your weather up there now, Joanne? How cold are you?
We're not too bad. We had a bit of a warm up today. Gary, what would a Fahrenheit be? I'm like, say today was 12 Celsius, so
It was then, that would have been like mid-40s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary's American. Okay. So Gary's American, so he can do the flip faster than I can.
Okay, well, here in Maryland, it was 65 degrees.
Wow.
Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and it's going to be like that all week.
Okay.
So my bees are out there flying, and they're looking for things to gather for nectar. So I am really cognizant when I am planting a garden for bees that I plant things that flower very early. And there are not a whole lot, but there are certainly choices that I can go with.
Okay.
And I have things that are flowering, and as soon as it warms up, the bees are out, and they are on my flowers.
Okay. Can you tell us a few of your favorite early ones?
Yes. I have... Of course, winter aconite.
Oh, okay.
Euranthus, which is a tiny little bulb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like snowdrops, but it's yellow.
Okay.
And, in fact, I just posted a blog on it. I forgot to mention my blog is The Garden Diaries. And I just posted a blog on how to grow it and how important this little flower, it's a little tiny flower that's about 3 inches high.
Okay.
And it will just take over an area and bloom for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then it just disappears.
Oh, wow. 3 weeks. That's a great length of time for this early spring.
Early spring.
Yeah.
It started in February.
Wow.
Okay. Now, another one that I like is when... is witch hazel that
mm-hmm.
blooms very early, and that's blooming right now. And my heather. Heather blooms, it's funny, it blooms starting in December for me, and it has continued. It will continue for 3 months at least.
Okay.
So that is just literally covered with bees. And another really important one is Lenten Rose or Hellebores.
Hellebores, yes. I just put those in my garden last year, so I'm looking forward to those.
Are they blooming there?
No,
yet?
Mine aren't, but mine were just planted in the fall, so I don't know if it, you know, takes a little bit for them to get established.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, they're really important because they bloom starting in February here, and they'll bloom for 3 months at least.
Wow.
So that's a real. Those are my top picks for early nectar and pollen for
okay.
my bees.
Excellent.
It's easy to plant and get stuff blooming in April, May, June,
mm-hmm.
July, and August.
Yeah.
But for early, like, you know, early March, late February, that's the toughie. And also late bloomers, I'm really concerned. So I always am sure to plant a lot of late bloomers, asters, Joe Pye weed,
mm-hmm.
all these late bloomers that will bloom like in November.
Right.
I need plants that will grow and flower in November,
okay.
not just grow, but flower.
Yeah, but flower. Now, are those, the snowdrops you mentioned, are they the only bulb or some of the other early bulbs like crocus? Yeah, they're good as well?
Yeah, I mean, all the like grape hyacinth,
mm-hmm.
the little miniature iris, those are blooming for me. They just opened up within the past week, the mini iris. They're iris reticulatas. And actually, that's one of my favorite spring bloomers because it once you plant it, you will always have it.
Ooh.
It multiplies.
Okay.
And it's that beautiful blue color. And it's only 3 or 4 inches tall.
Excellent.
So that is one of my favorite early bloomers. But so that just started this week.
Okay.
And the snowdrops, they're about done here. We're finished.
Yeah.
With snowdrops.
Because I don't know that many people think that bulbs are a pollinator plant. You know, they go right to the obvious ones. You know,
oh, yeah.
You know, the echinacea and the black-eyed Susan. You know, they go right to those ones. And don't think about bulbs. You know,
exactly.
So we should really be talking about, because you plant the bulbs in the fall, of course. So that should be really something we promote as an industry in the fall to get those, you know, pollinators in the ground.
Yeah, I know. People should be thinking about this in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
As a gardener, you should be thinking about it. Tulips also are very early. And I just learned that bees collect black pollen from tulips.
Really?
And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. They have this, you know, this black stamen in the center. A lot of tulips.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. But any of the early spring bulbs are really important. And they're really inexpensive to buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And plant.
Yeah. How about daffodils?
Yeah, daffodils are great. They're a little later. Mm-hmm. They are just popping up. They're budding up for me. They haven't started.
Okay, so they're a spring one, but not necessarily an early spring one.
Yeah, it's not that early. But, yeah, it is very important, the daffodils. And I like the miniature daffodils, too.
Mm-hmm.
The big daffodils are lovely, but they can add up to your pocketbook if you plant a lot of them.
Yeah, and then the foliage takes a while to die back, right?
Oh,
so, I tend to like the mini things as far as bulbs go because then they die. The leaves die back a little quicker and are hidden by the other plants when the other plants grow in, that type of thing.
Yeah, you're talking like a landscaper now.
that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate everybody.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I do plant daffodils, but I like them more in the lawn, naturalized.
Oh, okay. But you have two acres to do that with. We don't.
Yes. Yeah. But if you plant them in a garden, exactly. There's foliage. It looks ugly for a while, and you hate to cut it back because they have to store their food in it.
Yeah.
But it is a pretty flower, and I would not be without a daffodil.
Yeah. I'm sure you've had the customers who say, I don't know why my daffodils or my tulips never come back. And they find out that they every spring they cut the leaves down, right? Because they don't cut the leaves, so.
Or no, they said, why didn't my tulips bloom? And I'm like, well, the deer ate them.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, so I should say that deer love tulips, but they can't eat daffodils.
Yes, same with squirrels. So you have deer issues, we have squirrel issues. So
we do,
squirrels. Yes. So I definitely I kind of suggest to most of my customers to plant daffodils instead of tulips because of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tulips, the bulbs are edible. I mean, I think people used to eat the bulbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that is like candy to an animal.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But I believe daffodils are poisonous.
Yes, I believe so, too. And the alliums, anything in the onion family, are always good choices, too.
Alliums are, deer will never touch them.
Yeah,
and by the way, alliums are always covered with bees.
Oh,
it
wonderful.
It is a great plant, which is a bulb also.
Mm-hmm.
In the onion family that you can plant. And I like alliums because even if you have a full garden, I mean, it's fully planted with perennials that are right next to each other, you can just insert a bulb of an allium all between your plants, and they'll pop up in between the plants and tower above the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that you can plant in a really, really tight garden.
And they do. I find they bloom at a really good time. You know, they kind of are a good bridge flower, you know, after the spring bloomers have kind of finished and before the real, you know, June and July flowers have started. They really add a nice bridge to the garden. I like to think of it.
You're right. And I believe the Garden Bureau, National Garden Bureau, announced 2016 was the year of the allium.
I thought so, too.
I think they're trying to make people more aware of alliums because I don't think people really know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to gardens and see them, people are like, what is that? What is that big flower?
That happened at the fling, remember?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So a lot of people didn't know what they were.
It is a pricey flower. but again, it's something that you plant and it will always be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is great. So that's a good one as far as bees. And do you want to talk about a few other favorites?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I also suggest that you go with long bloomers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say long bloomers, it could be an annual, like a zinnia or a tithonia, which is Mexican sunflower.
Okay.
And this is something that once it starts blooming, like in June, it just never stops. It never ends. And we didn't discuss natives at all. I do like natives, but, you know, zinnias and the tithonia are not natives, but mm-hmm. I love them. So go with a long bloomer. Another long bloomer is agastache or anise hyssop.
Okay.
Can you grow that?
I believe we can, yes.
Okay, because it sometimes it's not the hardiest plant.
Okay.
I mean, I always add to my collection because a few of them die over mm-hmm. the winter. But agastache or the anise hyssop, it will start blooming for me in June and continue until frost.
Okay. It's not and as it, popular it, one here, but I'm pretty sure we
not?
Can. No, I'm pretty sure. I'm just going to Google it quickly, but I'm pretty sure we can grow it.
The agastache is like one of my number one long-lived bloomers. And you don't have to have a garden. So many of my clients don't have big flower gardens. They have shrub borders or, you know, or they just live in an apartment or condo. So what do you do for a pollinator garden? And I say, well, let's do containers. And I call them nectar in a pot.
That's great.
Yeah, so it becomes a movable feast. So even if you have a patio that, say, is shaded in the morning and has afternoon sun, you can move that pot to follow the sun. Because unfortunately, most blooming plants that bees like are flowering and they like the sun.
Okay.
You have to have sun.
Right.
And I would say at least 6 hours of sun. And so, you know, if you have a deck or balcony, put that pot in the sunniest spot and move it around if you want. You know, you don't have to have a big pot, just maybe a grouping of three.
Okay.
And plant your nectar plants in there. Pentas is another great mm-hmm. bloomer, annual bloomer, that the butterflies love. You can plant your miniature butterfly plants. You can grow butterfly plants there, can't
we
you?
Butterfly bush, but they do tend to, depends on the winter. So they are borderline.
Yeah.
For me, in my zone, I'm 5B. So in my zone, it's just borderline hardy. So you might get it for a couple of years, and then the third year, you've lost it kind of thing. But I've had some clients who've managed to keep it. And I had worked on a garden at my son's school when they were younger, and there's of all the butterfly bushes we planted in our outdoor classroom that we, you know, we tried to plant a lot of pollinator type things. One of the mm-hmm. butterfly bushes, like literally no TLC, no care whatsoever, and it's done really well. But we probably planted like six of them, and one has, you know, made it the, you know, 15 years that that's been. It's been a while since I did that, but.
I always say a dead plant is an opportunity to plant something new.
That's a good one.
So, yeah, if it dies, you get something else. There are some miniature butterfly bushes now that I've been using in clients, places like Butterfly Chip. And these will only get 3 or 4 feet tall instead of 6 to 7 feet tall. So you can put the little ones in a container, and they will really draw the butterflies. Now, butterfly bush, a lot of people complain that it's not a native, it's just a nectar plant, it's not a host plant for any caterpillar. But, you know, I'm like, it's a nectar plant.
Yeah.
It is performing a great function for me.
And
I do the pots, and in the pots, I'll put a lot of annuals like zinnias, lantana, the pentas, celosia, and then I'll put some, throw some perennials in there like the agastache or achillea.
Yep.
That's a great colony. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good one. And that's a late one, right? Is that one of your favorite late ones?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. And it's not going to get really big like a Joe Pye weed would get huge.
Yep.
But the Achillea or Yarrow are the great plant, and it does bloom for a long time. Another one that I use is Verbena bonarensis, and it's a pretty plant. It's a little ball-like pink flower held on a long stem that waves in the breeze. Also, let's not forget herbs. Herbs are really important. You know, the flowering herbs like sage and oregano, basil, all these are really good pollinator plants.
Yeah, that's great.
I find, have you heard of Xerces Society?
No.
It's Xerces.
Okay.
It's a nonprofit corporation, and they have a book app, which I use all the time for pollinator ideas. But they, if you just go online to Xerces.org, they will give you a list by region of all the plants that you could plant that would attract pollinators.
Excellent.
So that's really a valuable resource.
Now, speaking of resource, you've also designed a poster, right? You have a poster.
Yeah, I have a poster. It's Plant These for Bees poster, and it's a picture that I drew it and painted it in watercolor, and I did it in color pencil. And since I'm a beekeeper, I made a bee skep, and I separated into sections and colored in a different plant that bees would visit. So I had poppies in there, lavender, sunflowers, they're verbena. It's 21 different flowers.
Wow, that's
great. So I started putting that on my blog, and then I had people ask me to buy it. So then I opened an Etsy shop where I sell it.
Excellent.
And, yeah, I come to find out that I posted it on Facebook, on my Facebook page, The Garden Diaries, and Seed Savers Exchange,
okay,
which sells heirloom open source seeds. They posted it, they shared it on their page, and they got over 2 million views on
it. Wow. So it's a popular poster.
So I was pretty happy about that. But, yeah, if you want to go on my blog and look at it,
okay,
it will show it to you. And all. And it just gives you 21. Of course, there's many, many more
for sure.
You can plant.
For sure. So her website, once again, for our listeners, is thegardendiaries.com.
Yep.
Excellent. And you can check out the poster there and then visit the store, the Etsy store, if you want to purchase one. Well, that's great. Our time is like, we're flying by. Oh, my goodness. There's so much to talk about. There's so much to talk about, Claire. So I do want to go back a bit because you mentioned we talked about butterfly bush. So it's not just bees that are pollinators, right? The butterflies are very important and also under threat. Did you want to speak to that a little bit?
Sure. You know, the monarch butterfly and the honeybee, they're like the poster child of pollinators.
Right.
But there's so many more, or not more important, but just as important pollinators. And really, any animal that goes into a flower and touches the flower and then goes to another flower is in the act of pollination. So even though the honeybee is very important to us agriculturally, other pollinators like the monarch butterfly and other butterflies, moths, bats, shrews, mice, beetles, and all the other native bees are really important. And I always tell people, I said, you know, one of the most important pollinators is flies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're just like, what? Flies? And I'm not talking about house flies that annoy you, but there are some flies, native flies, and you might see them on flowers. They have big green eyes. They're really interesting. and they're real fuzzy. And I see them on my mint flowers all the time. They love mint flowers.
Okay.
So, yeah, let's not say honeybees are the only pollinators
right.
and monarchs. But all these other insects, animals are doing the same work. Mm-hmm. It's just that monarchs seem to be this important and wonderful insect because it migrates
mm-hmm.
so many miles.
Yeah.
And that, I guess, catches people's imagination that it makes this long journey, you know, from the United States down through the United States down into Mexico.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a romanticized view of it, but it is a wonderful, wonderful insect. And I've talked about monarch way stations.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that.
Plant pollinator-friendly gardens, or pocket gardens, I call them,
okay.
of milkweed. And I'm sure most of your listeners know that monarch caterpillars, that the only plant that it feeds on is milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
And so this plant is so important to keep the monarch butterfly going and increase their numbers. And, you know, just a couple years ago, the monarch butterfly was put on the watch list. That meant that we were afraid that it was going to go extinct.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers were down so far. But in the past couple years, I think that the public has really become aware of it, and they're starting to plant these milkweeds. And the numbers have actually increased,
yeah.
and they were doing quite well last year.
Yeah,
not up to their, you know, like 20 years ago
okay.
number, but much better than they have been.
Okay.
So the importance of planting milkweed is really, really high on my list
mm-hmm.
for people. When they want a pollinator garden, I say, well, first thing we're going to plant is milkweed.
Really? Now, you don't worry, is it invasive?
Do you plant milkweed in your gardens there?
No, I've tried. It can be invasive for us. How is it for you? Invasive?
It grows
mm-hmm.
like crazy here.
Yeah,
I mean, now, to find the plants, that's the other story.
Yes, yeah. It's becoming more and more popular to find it, but it is hard to find.
Yeah, but it's becoming more saleable, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the nurseries are starting to grow it. In fact, I saw a nursery who had some of the common milkweed, which is Asclepia syriaca. That's the one that's native to the Mid-Atlantic, and they were selling it. I was shocked.
Wow.
But it's becoming more available, and you can grow from seed if you want. I have flats and flats of it that I'm starting inside under grow lights this year.
Okay.
So plant that milkweed, because the problem is that more and more farmers are using Roundup.
Yeah,
and they're spraying that on their crops to get rid of the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, that takes care of all the other stuff that's
right.
growing around the field and maybe inside the field.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was milkweed
mm-hmm.
and the other, you know, wildflowers that used to grow, like Queen Anne's lace,
yeah,
goldenrod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that Roundup kills everything. And that was the problem, I think, with the numbers of monarchs. The caterpillars did not have the food source available to them. They just couldn't find it. So now people are becoming aware of it, and they're planting the milkweed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think in the past, I know when I worked in the garden centers, it was, you know, those little plants back in the back corner of the garden center on the benches in the whole little native section with a trillium or two, right? But now I think it's becoming much more, the big box stores are kind of marketing it with a little tag that has the picture of the monarch. Like, they're becoming almost a little, you know, they're really marketing it. They're using it as quite a marketing tool. So I think that's good. I mean, you know, they're doing it for their own benefit. But if it helps the butterflies, then that's a good thing. And helps inform everybody, right?
Who wouldn't want to help a butterfly?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned to me about the Million Pollinator Challenge. Do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah. The Million Pollinator Garden Challenge, you just go online. It's, you know, just millionpollinatorgardenchallenge.org.
Okay.
And you can register your garden. As long as you have any kind of pollinator plants, it doesn't have to be a big place.
Okay.
It can just be one container on your deck.
Okay.
You can register it on this website. And this is a non-profit website. And what they're trying to do is have people from all over North America register. And what they're asking, once your flowers start to bloom, you pick a week and you say you count all the pollinators that come to your plant, this one particular plant, for 10 minutes each day.
Wow.
For 1 week.
Okay.
And it's kind of like there was just the count the birds in your backyard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Campaign. But this is count your pollinators.
Right.
So what I do is in a week in June when I have something blooming that's the bees really like, or any pollinator, the bee butterfly. So go out to the garden, I'll look at that plant, and I'll time it for 10 minutes and just count how many come to that particular plant.
Okay, so you're not out there all day.
And enter that information.
Okay, so you're not out there all day counting which ones are there for 10 minutes.
Because I'm like, for 1 week.
Okay, so because I'm like, Claire, we've got lots to do in June, right?
I know. Well, the interesting thing is, this is what I call is citizen science.
Yeah.
Where people are participating and entering this information, and then you can go and look at the site and you can find out state by state what the results are, because what they'll do is they'll average it out how many visits come, and it's amazing how many visits of pollinators will come in 10 minutes. Like in my state, it was like 14.1 visits by pollinators within that 10-minute period. But then you look at a state. I was doing a talk in Vermont, so I looked up Vermont. And it was like 3.1.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that is a huge, huge difference.
Yeah.
So what they're doing, or what we're doing, is we're gathering all this information. And this website compiles it, then scientists look at this.
Mm-hmm.
And they can, you know, spot trends of where pollinators are doing well and where they're doing poorly.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great, great project, which I would urge everybody to participate in.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely check that out and see if that is something that Canadians can participate in as well. But that's really interesting. And
anybody can do it.
Yeah.
You just register online and enter your numbers.
And that's good. And I guess in an area where you're seeing that good numbers are really good, then other areas can kind of look at, like, okay,
what does that mean?
Doing, yeah. What are they doing differently, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, as a participant, you're not analyzing the information.
Right.
But it's good information to take in and see the trends. But, you know, scientists are actually using this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a really good thing that people can do in their own yards, like you said, to really help the science and help us continue to keep this topic top of mind. And in addition to going to your garden centers and your big box stores and asking and looking for pesticide-free plants and neonics, you know, plants that don't have neonics on them. Because that's really important as well. How are you finding that more and more in your area?
I couldn't hear you.
Oh, did you lose me?
Oh,
okay, sorry. Just about the other thing that people can do is asking. We highlighted it a little earlier about asking at their garden centers and their big box stores for pesticide-free plants.
Yes. Yeah, ask for pesticide-free plants. And at the very least, ask your nursery to have labels.
Right.
So you know which has been treated and which hasn't.
And what's the problem with the ones that have been treated? Do you want to just touch on that for a second?
Yeah, sure. Well, the ones that have been treated or grown from seed that have been treated, the pesticide is a long-lasting pesticide. Mm. So it's taken up by the plant in every part, in its stem, its roots, its leaves, its flower, its pollen, its nectar, and its fruit. So it permeates the entire plant and makes the entire plant poisonous. So it's obvious that you don't want to be eating fruit from a plant that's been treated with neonic, because you're going to get a small dose of that.
Right.
But the problem with the pollinators is when they go in and collect pollen or nectar, the neonic is present in very minute quantities, but it's enough to poison them. And scientists have found out that the effects of these neonics makes the bee not to be able to navigate. And this is huge. If the bee or the other pollinator cannot navigate, they cannot find their way back to the hive. So they die.
Yeah.
So you really have to be concerned with what plant you're going to be planting and if it has been treated. I know I look, and I believe Lowe's, or I shouldn't mention a big box store, but a few of the big box stores are starting to label it, and I was very happy to see that. So they must be getting pressure from people, and I'm glad to see that they're starting to do this. Yeah. Have you noticed it in any of your stores?
I have, yes, I have. Last year especially, I think we'll say Home Depot, I believe, was labeling as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's where it's got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, it's baby steps. And I think that the more and more people, gardeners, and even if you're not a gardener, if you're just interested in your health. Or the health of the planet, that if you just, you know, make your wishes known.
Yes.
They should listen.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Claire. You've told us a lot today. You've given me some really great, given us some really great tips on some early spring bloomers and some late bloomers. I love the idea that you, even if you don't have a garden, you can still have a pollinator garden in containers on your deck or patio. I think that's a wonderful thing. Absolutely. And I want everybody to know your, what else would you like to tell us about, to mention or to promote before we wrap up tonight?
Well, just check my blog out, The Garden Diaries, and if you follow it, you get like a post every week, and it could be on pollinators, beekeeping, gardening in general. I do a lot of containers, vegetable garden, some cooking, anything to do with gardening.
Excellent.
So just check that out if you're interested. You can check out my Etsy shop if you want to see my poster. But that's it.
Okay, great. And you are, how is your phone? Have you started doing any landscape designs?
Yeah. I'm meeting some clients this week to do some work. But it's not pollinator gardens.
Right.
I love it when I get asked to do a pollinator garden.
Okay. And you design gardens in the Maryland, primarily the Maryland area?
Yes. Maryland, that would be Baltimore and D.C.
Okay.
And I also wanted to mention on my blog, I have a plan of a pollinator garden that you can download.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
All right. And, you know, we've just been talking about annuals and perennials, but trees and shrubs are really important, too.
Okay. Can I go on there and share that?
I've included all these things, annuals, perennials, herbs, trees and shrubs, so you can have a complete smorgasbord
Excellent.
For any pollinator.
Excellent. Can I go on your site and then share that with my listeners on the on my Facebook page?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I will do that, definitely. So watch for that. Or please check out Claire's website on her blog at the gardendiaries.com. So I wanted to thank you so much. I think it's a really important topic. And I love hearing about it from someone who's also passionate about gardening. I think that's really important. Yeah. So you're passionate about the bees, but you're also passionate about the gardens
and the plants.
Absolutely.
It's
all about the plants. So thank you so much, Claire, for being on the show this evening.
And thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yes.
And love talking to you.
Great. And I hope we talk soon, okay?
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, everyone. I hope you learned about a few. I took ferocious notes there, and I will review some of those and post them up on my Facebook page as well, because I think there's some really great options. And it's hard. We can't really plant our early spring bloomers now because it's spring, but that's something throughout the season or when you're buying some plants this season to really keep in mind for next year, and having things available to the bees right when they first start moving around. And I know we have, surprisingly enough, dandelions are really important here in Ontario. I know we were used to them being sprayed and mowed down, and everybody tries to dig them up or spray them with the iron killer, but really they're pretty important to the bees because they are one of the first things that bloom, not necessarily in our gardens, but on our lawns. So that's something to keep in mind, that if you can keep a few dandelions around in the early spring, that really helps the bees. So I wanted to thank everybody for joining us this evening, and I hope you learned a lot. And please check out Claire's poster. I'm sure I've seen it, and it is beautiful. So it's a really interesting thing, have that piece of artwork that's very informative as well, if you'd like. So I'm looking forward to chatting. I know I mentioned it last week, we were talking about vegetables, but next week we are talking about vegetable gardening.
Yes, I'm waiting.
So I have it. I'm really looking forward to speaking with Megan, and we're going to talk about vegetable gardening next week here on Down the Garden Path on Reality Radio 101. So once again, want to thank everybody for joining me down the garden path. Have a good night.
You have been listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.